This is CliffCentral.com.
You sure a funny man.
I'm warning you with peace and love.
All right, let's get stuck in. We've got lots to talk about today and lots to get to. That's Dr. Coot Show with, what was it? Gregor Salto. Can't Stop Playing. You like that?
Bum 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 bum
bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum bum. Okay, we can carry on all day.
The kind of stuff that gets you into bar counters, yeah?
It was actually dancing on a speaker. Not a bar counter.
I think you were also on the bar counter.
Oh,
the same.
No.
Yes. I think so.
Okay.
All right. So, Mubs, what do we need to know? And what's the most important stuff for people to get talking to people, colleagues necessarily, that they don't like today at the office about?
Oh, I mean, just so that like?
You know, sometimes you have to talk to people. Maybe you've got a business meeting with some boring people and you need to have something to discuss with them. What should we talk to them about?
Gareth, let's begin with a couple of studies, shall we? Now, I know that we should take studies with a pinch of salt, but what these studies do is they do create interesting points of conversation based on whether you believe in such studies or whether they think that they're complete BS.
All right.
So the global market research and consortium, consulting firm Ipsos, they conducted an interesting study recently where they had over 291,000 interviews that were conducted between September and October last year.
291,000?
291,000 interviews on its online panel system.
It's a big system.
Where they were conducting research to see which country or how countries rank in terms of misery.
Oh,
delightful.
And
misery.
They conducted it in only 38 countries in the world. The research is titled Perils of Perception. And I hate to say it, but South Africa has topped the list as the most miserable lot in the world. I mean, in the world is out of 38 countries that were surveyed.
Sounds fair, I guess.
Sounds depressing.
All right, can we start with what misery really means?
Okay, well, let's begin with what exactly the study was looking at. It was looking at perils of perception, which essentially looks at how wrong people are about key issues and features of their country and their population. So part of the places where we ranked in first are, for example, our murder rate. Because when you take the murder rate into consideration, 85% of South African respondents believed that the murder rate in this country was higher than it was back in the year 2000. 11% said that it was about the same, and 4% believed that it was lower. But according to the organization, our murder rate is actually down by 29% since the year 2000.
I get it. So the misery survey is basically about how wrong you are about what's really going on.
Yes.
Is that it?
Basically, your cell phone just
fell apart.
That's misery.
Yeah, that's
your cell phone's the most miserable cell phone in the
that
room.
That is it.
So it's a glass half full versus glass half empty kind of scenario.
In other words, we've got a bad attitude.
In other words, we think our country and South Africans are worse than what our situation actually is. So they looked at the murder rate. They looked at suicide rates. It was exactly the same. A lot of South Africans seem to think that more and more people are killing themselves than the actual statistics
and
suggest.
And they're not.
And they're absolutely not. You, for example, you look at things like the social grant system. Now, the University of KwaZulu-Natal academics said that an example of mistaken belief was the fact that there are a lot of teenagers in our country who get pregnant on purpose so that they can access social grants. The actual research proves otherwise.
Mm.
So it's all about perceptions that we have about South Africa as a nation. I mean, obviously we hate our politicians.
Oh yeah, they don't help us.
And
they're not making it any better.
And we seem to think that all politicians in this country are a terrible group of people. If you looked at the research, you would probably find that not entirely true.
Okay, so stop feeling sorry for yourself and stop feeling worried about things. It's not as bad as you think it is. That's the basic idea here.
Sure. Just
so we can clear this up, misery According to the original definition, misery is wretchedness of condition or circumstance, distress or suffering caused by need, privation, or poverty, great mental or emotional distress, or a cause or source of distress. And then there's an older use for it. People used to say, I have a misery in my left side.
Oh, classy.
Which means a pain. You have a misery in your... My hands are so rheumatic. They're yes. so sore from rheumatism that I have a misery in my hands.
Okay, so we aren't miserable in
no,
the...
No, we think we're worse off than we are.
Yeah, but I think
but that is what makes us a miserable lot. Yes.
What this says is, though, we have a lot that is going on that's not exactly the most positive of things.
Sure.
Hence why, really, when you go to a dinner party and the conversation that happens when you're waiting in line, just the general conversation that happens in this country is really a bit of a downer. Mm-hmm. We're so quick to just complain.
Sure, but I mean that there are issues that we can't ignore. Like Bloomberg does a study on misery as well, mm-hmm. yeah. and how they define misery is inflation and unemployment. Mm-hmm. So what have we got in this country that's pretty bad? I know inflation's kind of, you know, chilled out a bit, mm-hmm. but unemployment's a horrible reality, yes. and that makes a lot of people very, very miserable because you feel you can't ever escape your misery. Because there's no job, there's no opportunities. You're not suddenly going to go, oh, I'm going to start a business today. Oh, wait, I have a miserable existence and I have no resources or means to do so. And because you look at the government pissing away tax money, all that kind of stuff, your misery keeps you in a bit of a hole.
Well, there's also the fact, and we've got to be realistic about certain things, that 30 million South Africans are living in poverty and most of them are kids.
Yeah.
So... that's a reality.
That is a reality. Yeah.
30 million South Africans are living in poverty mm-hmm. when the general population of the whole country is, what, 55 million?
So the number of people living in poverty has increased from 27 million in 2011 to 30 million in 2015, with almost 14 million people living in what they call extreme poverty. Mm. And, of course, black Africans remain the majority of those living in poverty, 46.6% affected, followed by coloureds, 32.2%, less than 5% of Indians. And for whites, the figure is less than 1%. So you can understand why a lot of these perceptions exist, because they're grounded in statistical realities. They live in rural areas, these poor people, mm-hmm. In provinces like Limpopo, Eastern Cape, and KZN most especially. The majority of those living in poverty are children aged 17 and below. So that's some reality for you. Mm. If you're going to be miserable about something, be miserable about that.
Yeah.
Right.
Not now, your perception of
one
things.
Of the professors involved in the study, Professor Seiji Nasia, who is a sociologist, he said that the responses could express the views of the middle class as well as the working class, adding that the views of the middle class are in turn influenced by social media, which is filled with Donald Trump's favorite fake news mm-hmm. and misinformation. So they're citing citing social media and the stuff that happens on social media as part of the reasons why South Africans think we're in a far worse off state than what the statistics say we are.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a misery hotspot, and be slightly more philosophical.
Misery hotspot.
I think for many South Africans, we've always been sold this dream, okay? So 94, PJ Powers was singing and Francois Pienaar had his shorts around
Don't
his armpits.
Don't blame Auntie PJ.
But like, it was this dream where we were all sold in South Africa. Suddenly black people would become rich again, or they would have money, or they would, all this kind of stuff.
And we would all suddenly get along.
And everyone would get a house like Oprah. But all these dreams that we were sold by politicians have never really come to fruition. So how do they counteract that? Well, they sell more dreams. So this whole free education thing, it's not a dream that is being sold, but there's no delivery. So therefore, people are starting to kind of think, well, this is such a miserable existence because we just lied to the whole time. Like, there's nothing but lies. There's no follow through.
Well, it reminds me of my favorite song about this. Just listen to how miserable this guy is. Just listen to this. This doesn't personify misery. You're better off than this guy, trust me. Just listen to the sound of his voice. Will give you every indication that you're a happier person than him. His name is Tom Waits. Ever heard of him? Listen to this guy. And the song is called...
Sounds miserable.
Yeah, the song is called Misery is the River of the World.
Oh, my goodness.
just listen, it's good. This is your education this morning, all right?
All that the monkey can climb, no more he shows his tail. Call no man happy till he dies,
there's no milk at the bottom of the pail. God built the church, the devil built the chapel, like the thistles that are growing on the trunk of the tree. All the good in the world
you can put inside a thimble.
Still have room for you.
Yes, say it, go on.
If there's one thing you can say
about mankind, there's nothing kind about man. Right, all right,
jeez,
enough of that.
Like what?
This guy, he's miserable.
Miserable.
Another really great saying around misery and all that kind of stuff is that misery loves company.
Yeah.
So how often do people just pull each other into this whole misery cycle? Because we feel that it becomes a norm.
Well, if you've ever been involved in those conversations, it usually starts like this. Someone says, oh, I had such a terrible day yesterday, which is fine. But then everybody else hops in with their terrible day.
Yeah.
And it's almost, you know, like, I have to one-up you as well. Yeah. Oh, you think that's bad? Well, I...
And meanwhile, you're still living better than any of your ancestors ever did. Meanwhile, you're complaining about stuff that 100 years ago, people would have been thrilled to have a problem with. Because they didn't. They used to wash in the river. Well, and you're worried about...
If they were lucky.
Oh, my power was out for a whole 10 hours yesterday.
Well, and then just in a closer to home example, if you're complaining about being stuck in traffic, well, more than half of the country doesn't even have a car.
Yeah.
To be stuck in traffic in,
right?
They have nowhere to go because they're in classified
poverty. Look around
poverty.
You. Look around you in the traffic.
Exactly.
See misery. But actually, this is people who are going out to do meaningful, gainful employment.
Mm.
But it's so easy to find misery because you become so engrossed by what's happening around you. But there's a thing that's making big news this week. It was this Australian woman. She died at the age of 27. Her name's Holly Butcher.
Mm-hmm.
She got this dreadful form of cancer that just goes into your bones. And actually, it's been known to affect young people. So she's been wasting away for the last year, knowing that she has no future whatsoever. And obviously, when you get to this position, you become quite philosophical. You start understanding a few things.
Mm-hmm.
And misery was never part of her life, actually, in this last year. All she could think of was how grateful she was to have this extra year, how amazing things are in this world. And she wrote this really sort of heartfelt letter before she died. And it's gone viral this week because, unfortunately, she passed away. And if you go through this letter, there's not a touch of misery. There's nothing. There's only just really great frank advice, all the things that we forget because we're so miserable with all the things we don't have in the world. And she's going, I'll get Dory to show this if she hasn't already.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a pretty long sort of letter, this. But she just breaks down the core facts of what is actually going to make us happy in life. And none of it's about, oh, you know, I wish I was thinner. I wish I did this or that. And it's like, do it if you want.
Perspective, bro.
But stop being so hard on yourself because you're going to become so miserable.
Especially now, January, right? A lot of people are going back to work. A lot of people don't have jobs. Maybe you just got out of matric. Maybe you've just finished your degree. You don't have anything lined up. And you're sitting at home on your hands. You're hearing about all these other people who are starting their year.
Mm.
You're looking at your bank balance and you're going, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. Give yourself a chance. You're not going to suddenly walk into a job straight after school.
Mm.
You're not going to suddenly walk into the position that you want in a business. You're going to have to do some horrible work to begin with. And it's not the worst thing.
Yeah.
It's part of learning. It's all part of that hardship. And by the way, I'll reiterate, Vusi Tembakwayo, who's our guest tomorrow, 8 o'clock, you don't want to miss this. He talks about this. He's a tremendously successful man.
Mm.
He's done very, very well. He's made hundreds of millions of rands. And he also started with nothing. Less than nothing. Because his mother had to work so hard to push him through school when his dad was killed. Nothing. Came out of nothing. And the guy made an incredible life for himself. But don't think it just happened overnight.
Mm. Just getting back to that letter that Holly wrote, there's this great paragraph where it just says, also remember, if something is making you miserable, you do have the power to change it. In work or love, whatever it may be, have the guts to change. You don't know how much time you've got on this earth. She's a prime example of this, 27 years, that was it. So don't waste it being miserable. I know that's said all the time, but it couldn't be more true. So a lot of the time, we also just like, we gloss over the fact that, oh, you know I can change, but it's just so hard.
Yeah.
I just don't want to do it.
Looking at the Bloomberg Misery Index, we are in the same group as, firstly, so with Bloomberg, we were second overall. Venezuela was first. Argentina third. Greece, Turkey, Spain, Ukraine, Serbia, Brazil, and Uruguay. I mean, we have so much going for us. And the fact that we're listed in this group, y'all, says we should change and we should change ASAP.
Look, I know this is wishful thinking, but I often get the opinion that because people don't travel that much. I mean, even South Africans traveling in Africa alone, we don't know how good things really are. So therefore, we're stuck in this misery paradigm where we think, oh, everything must be so much better. But when you travel and you see other people live, it's quite hard to stay miserable when you think what you got.
What I like to do when I'm feeling miserable, which doesn't happen often, thankfully, is to go to Ryan Reynolds on Twitter. He's fantastic.
Really?
He's sarcastic. He's mean. He's got a sense of humor about everything. Like, for example, it was his brother's birthday in December, and he posted this. Jeff, that's his brother's name. If there was a fire and I had to choose a family member to save, obviously it'd be me. But if I had time to save one more, you could be damn sure I'd call the fire department. They're experts in the field and have vast experience in these matters. I love you. Happy birthday.
Oh, that's sweet.
He's so
he's
great.
Like, oh, really
he's
funny.
Fantastic. He retweeted this guy who said, give me a senior quote, bitch. I have a deadline. And then he replied, Satan is going to take it from here. He's so great.
Wait, is he the... Which
Ryan Reynolds Deadpool guy.
Yeah, Deadpool. Thank you. There you go. Deadpool. That's so what fantastic. I was looking for.
I'm so glad that he's known as Deadpool and not for all those dumb romantic comedies that he did.
Hey, the great? Proposal was also cool. Can I tell you what I do when I'm feeling kind of down in the dumps about this country particularly? It's so corny, but this has stayed with me for years. Do you remember? I think it was like a brand South Africa advert. Back years ago.
PJ
was like,
Powers was singing.
No, it was 2007, I think.
It was either PJ Powers or...
It was Desmond
Vicky
Tutu.
Sampson.
No, it was so... Do you guys not remember?
African dream.
But the ad started with like, Tutu standing on a hilltop somewhere and he says, today, I woke up in a place that said to me, be free. I mean, that ad for me still stays with me everywhere I go. Because the line right at the end of the ad is, you know, we live in South Africa where we're alive with possibility. And we don't need violence in the background to really just take this in for a second to go, actually, things really aren't that bad. We can make anything happen in this country. So let's stop complaining. We aren't miserable. Yeah. Let's go out there and make it happen.
But like another great Steve Jobs quote, other than always buy the new iPhone, he said that if you look around you, the life you see is just what other people thought that it would be. It doesn't have to be you. You didn't have to abide by all this crap you see around you.
That's so deep.
Because it was never a rule. It was just what people perceive life to be, and you are just living that out. You're living other people's impressions out. That's all you're doing. So you have the ability to change and change into what you want.
I know what the ad is that CEO is talking about. You want to hear it?
Yeah, let's do it.
See,
Take us there.
This is the right one.
Yes, I can hear from the music already.
This is Sia's life-changing moment.
I come from a beautiful land, richly endowed with wonderful natural resources, wide expanses, rolling mountains, singing birds, bright shining stars out of blue skies, with radiant sunshine, golden sunshine. There are enough of the good things that come from God's bounty. There are enough for everyone. Let me show you around.
Oh.
Oh, wow. That's
just even his voice.
Let me show you around.
But there's something that can be said about misery as well. It makes a great... Wait, hang on. It makes for great TV characters. Some of the best TV characters, movie characters have all been very miserable people.
Yeah.
There's this really great site I've discovered the last few weeks. It's called ranker.com, where you can vote on absolutely anything. Like any sort of genre or thing you can rank, and it'll give you all the votes. So... let's look at the top 10 most miserable people on TV.
Okay, these are now characters, obviously.
Character people, yeah.
Right.
So, Frank Barone from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yes.
He's a horrible brother.
I remember him.
He's number 10. Number 9 from Sesame Street, Oscar the Grouch.
Well, the Grouch.
His name.
Very miserable man. Perry Cox from Scrubs. He's the doctor who's always just so miserable and hates everybody.
Yes.
Now, there's actually a guy who's in the top 20 twice. This is his highest ranking. King of Queens. Arthur Spooner, remember he was...
Was that the dad?
He was the dad in Zoolander as well.
He was pretty miserable.
Never watched that. Angry. Yeah, all right.
Archie Bunker, I don't know who all in the family is, but remember number five, Sophia Petrillo?
Sophia from the Golden Girls.
Golden Girls,
she
yeah.
She was a grumpy old bitch.
She's ranked the fifth grumpiest, most miserable person in TV history.
Yes, always telling everybody else why they were wrong and stupid and
she
old.
Was the oldest she of was, the she Golden was Girls, right? Oldest.
But in real life, I think she was the youngest. But in the, yeah.
Yeah, in the story.
So she was the fifth most miserable
Dorothy's
person.
She was Dorothy's
mother. Number four, Sheldon Cooper from Big Bang Theory.
Yes.
Always miserable.
Don't watch that show.
That's okay, didn't have to. Al Bundy, third most miserable man in TV history.
Al Bundy, that poor man.
But he was everyone's working class miserable hero.
Wait a minute. Is this from Love and Marriage?
Yes.
Oh,
Married
okay.
to Children.
And Al Bundy would get home and first thing he'd turn on the TV and he'd stick his hand into his pants.
Oh.
And then he'd just sit there and then Peg would come in and start harassing him.
Just harassing
what?
Him.
Oh, the poor man.
Second most miserable character was Red Foreman from the 70s show.
Yes.
He was like a earlier version of Al Bundy, basically. Just
the
more
father.
Angry. More mm-hmm. angry. Mm-hmm. And the most miserable person in TV history. Can you guess?
Mm-mm. Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh.
That was more depressed, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah. Everything was always bad.
Tell me.
I'll give you a clue. It's got to do with medicine.
Medicine.
It's not a Grey's Anatomy thing, is it?
No. So you
most
already
miserable
mentioned
person, a doctor.
ER?
Oh, House?
Yes. Dr. Jonathan Witt.
Oh, yes, well... yes.
Dr. Gregory House, the most miserable.
Yes. He was always miserable.
Always so miserable.
I like those miserable characters. They make you feel better about yourself.
I like that website. What's it called?
Ranker.
Ranker.com.
Nice.
Yeah, I would have still put Eeyore up there. He is pretty shitty and miserable.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes the happy people aren't always the ones that you want to spend time with. I know that sounds ridiculous, but look at our president. He's always happy. Do you want to spend time with him?
Oh, well, let's more think like Ellen DeGeneres. She's always happy. I want to spend time with her.
All right, I got you.
All
right. Very, very good. Listen, we've got someone interesting popping by in a moment or two. We're going to talk to her. Tony Becker actually got hold of us last year. And we're going to talk about something that is kind of serious. It's very serious for a lot of people. It's life-threatening. But it's something that I think a lot of people are still unsure of. They're not sure of how it works. They're not sure where it comes from. Is it psychological? Is it chemical? Is it about body dysmorphia? Is it all of those things? Is it drug addiction, abusive relationships? Where does it all come from? I'm talking about anorexia because this is a disorder which is defined by extremely low body weight relative to stature, extreme and needless weight loss, an illogical fear of weight gain, and distorted perception of self-image and body. It's something a lot of women and increasingly a lot of men are suffering from. So I thought we'd talk to Tony. She's got quite a lot to say about this because she lived with anorexia for 16 years and it took her down to dark and cruel and nasty places. We'll find out what her journey was like and we'll find out whether or not there are lessons in it for you and for me and for many other people who are going through this stuff. What else is happening, Mubs? Is there other stuff that we need to pay attention to today?
Sure. Look, you mentioned the president and according to the ANC National Executive Committee, or rather sources within the NEC, they're saying that it is not a matter of if, but when Zuma goes.
That's not my job to do so.
It is now up to President Jacob Zuma to decide whether he wants a messy exit that could see him consigned to the dustbin of history without presidential benefits, or a dignified exit where he steps down voluntarily. This is the view of at least four members of the ANC's NEC, and this is ahead of the inaugural meeting in East London, which takes place next week.
I thought it was today.
Sorry, is today Wednesday? Yes,
no, today.
My bad. That takes place today.
Once again, the honourable member is premising his question on an information that is not accurate.
Yes.
Thank you, President.
Yeah. You are absolutely
thank you for
right.
correcting my Bali. Do you hear he called you the honourable member?
Well,
I think that was nice.
Okay. That meeting takes place today in East London. politicians who've been speaking to the media did not agree that today's meeting should be the place to recall Zuma should he refuse to step down. And this comes as some NEC members are pushing for the newly elected leadership to recall the president and to get the party on a clean state so that they can get things going ahead of the 2019 national elections.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's where the difference comes.
God, I can't wait for him to go. I'm so excited. Can't wait for this douchebag to be out of our lives. I'd be happy. I've said this before, right? I'd be happy if they don't prosecute him. I know people are going to get up all like moralistic on, and fair enough. He's done awful things and needs to pay the price. But I personally would like to just see him gone, even if the cost of that is that we don't send him to jail. Just go away. You've done so much damage already. It's like, you know, when the tornado leaves town, the last thing you're thinking about is, oh, we should have put up more barricades beforehand, or we should have all built deeper basements and, you know, built safer and stronger houses. It's not going to help you. The tornado's gone through town. Now you got to pick up the pieces. We got a lot of pieces to pick up. What's the worst job in 2018? Cyril.
Oh, shame.
So here are some comments on our misery discussion. I can't believe South Africans are the most miserable freaks in the world. We look so happy when we toy and allow every goddamn politician to screw us over and then run the country into the ground. Promises being made to students are not being kept. Isn't that enough reason to be miserable? George Costanza from Seinfeld should have made that list of miserable people.
Yeah, he was in the top 50.
Gareth, are you not the head boy of misery? Do I strike you as miserable? Do I seem to be miserable? I mean, I get miserable about stupid
guys,
little things.
Don't all disagree at all at once.
No, I'm asking because I don't. That's not how I see myself. So maybe there's a problem I have to address. I went for a stroll. Yeah, this is to Ben's point the other day about I went for a stroll on Long Street and was obviously approached and offered some drugs. Acknowledged the guy who I'd spoken to in the past and told him I'd like to try something else for the children. Pal, told him there's better things in store for him. He said thanks, shook my hand. He looks kind of like Mr. T. I then went back and told him about Cliff Central, which he saved on his phone. That's from Craig in Cape Town. Huh.
Oh, so you turned a drug dealer into a listener.
Yeah.
We accept all shapes, sizes, forms.
That's an amazing story.
Thanks. Background.
We'll take a drug dealer. Come
These
on,
These are
dude.
The amazing positive stories make us miserable.
Gareth was saying how he's giving all his entrepreneurial ideas out. This drug dealer might now become a billionaire because he's chosen the app.
There we go. Never, you never know.
Drugs and to Riches story.
Just a reminder that Rami Shwene and Tume Sole will be on this evening for Country Duty on cliffcentral.com. If you're looking for something else to download and listen to or to listen live, because they do a live show so that you can interact. And if you want to, you can do that on Twitter. You can call in. You can WhatsApp us. And by the way, the WhatsApp number is live. It's running now, 0797482090. All right. Anything else?
Well, just that MTN are busy working hard behind the scenes because they've apparently been trialing the first tests for 5G in Africa.
There are five. Five.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Mr. President. Mm. God, he's really talkative this morning.
All of this trialing went down during the first week of 2018 with a live demonstration that played out on Monday. Mm-hmm. And the 5G trial with MTN achieved over 20 gigabits per second.
Wow.
Was it gigabytes?
Gigabytes.
Yeah, gigabytes per second.
That's a new thing. That's how I was so impressed. I was like, oh.
Reportedly the highest achieved on a mobile network in Africa.
A bit is part of a byte.
Okay.
I think 1,000 bits in a byte.
Guys, we're still on 4G. We haven't 5G'd it yet.
No, but this is what MTN want to introduce.
This is what MTN are trying to introduce.
Do you remember the time that Celsi lied about 4G?
Sorry, what?
Remember that time that Celsi just lied about 4G?
No, what did they I don't lie about? Remember
they had
that.
This massive campaign with Trevor Noah. They just said, look at us, we got 4G. And they were like, yay, 4G. No, we don't have 4G.
So they were lying.
Years ago, back when 3G was like the business, they were like, okay, guys, we need something bigger. What's bigger than 3? 4. Genius.
Yeah, they didn't have 4G. They didn't have 4G, so there was no 4G. That was all a bullshit story to charge you more for the same. Let's hope 5G isn't like that, or we will all break down your offices. Do you understand? Yeah,
no. Don't even try that.
Don't. All right, so you know who John McAfee is?
Remind us again.
He creates antivirus software?
Yes, McAfee software. It's he's a tech pioneer. He's a cybersecurity visionary. And he is also one of the most outspoken people in the world. He's lived the most amazing life. And there's a documentary on him that's available right now. But he... he also is very out there with what he does in his life. So he tweeted, "So much noise about my admission to paying hookers with crypto." You know, yesterday Ron was telling us about porn you can get with crypto. So John McAfee pays hookers with cryptocurrencies. Mm. "If you want more reason to hate, I will also admit to buying weed and other illegal drugs, porn, and nearly every other questionable product or service that you can imagine, all with crypto, when possible. Hate well."
Oof.
And then people started climbing into him. He says all of that, and then some girl called Michelle says, "I suppose nothing wrong with paying for a good, honest sex job." And he replies, "Has always seemed fair to me. As the entire world already knows, I met my wife as a prostitute 5 years ago. Would probably not have met her otherwise." Isn't this guy interesting? Right?
So
he's married
then,
to...
Yeah, he's married to a prostitute.
Okay.
Then someone replies, "Then she tried to kill you a couple of times, lol." And he says, "No one's perfect."
Ain't that
what
the
a
truth.
Guy?
What an interesting life.
Don't we all want to be like him, where we can be that uninterested in other people's criticism of us?
Yeah, that's the goal, is to get to a point where you absolutely do not care what the next guy thinks about you.
Wow.
I just don't care.
He's great. I'm going to follow this guy. I think he sounds like he's the kind of guy I want to talk to.
Like, everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah. It's fantastic. He says, "Everyone that I follow is visited by an Irish dwarf who steals their children but also leaves a pot of gold. People weigh their options and some of them ask me for a follow." That's what he says on Twitter.
True.
I got to follow this guy. He seems great. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk to Tony about her life story, Tony Becker, who has suffered from anorexia. We're going to discuss all of that with her. Very open, honest discussion, I should hope. And you could be a part of it. You know what to do. 0861-555-189 if you want to call us, if you want to be a part of the conversation with WhatsApp, 0797482090. And of course, we've got Twitter and WeChat and all of that stuff too, if you want to come on there. All right? Very easy. We make it so easy for you to join in. That's coming up next. Mind's running wild. Pascal and Pierce with Jethro Tate and Running Wild. You know what irritates me a little bit about being online instead of being in traditional media is that you don't hear from your enemies so much. I don't get to hear from people who hate us because they don't listen and they don't write to us. And on radio, you're in their face whether they like you or not. So it kind of means that we always get correspondence from people who love what we're doing, which is fantastic. But I do love a bit of hate mail every now and then.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I do. What?
Every time you ask for it, it comes up every now and again.
Well, I'd like you to be more...
Trickle.
If you'd like to be more hateful, gareth@cliffcentral.com.
You know, we can't get high off our own Kool-Aid.
No.
And if we're constantly receiving just compliments, then that's what happens.
You end up like Sia.
Yeah, that's the problem. So if anyone has anything positive, because I get a lot of hate.
All right, well, here's something from Michael from Durban, who says, "I just finished listening to the J-something discussion, and I must say, what a guy. Absolutely love this dude. He's such a credit to South Africa. Talented musician, chef, and so much more. He's just one of the many fantastic people you've had in the studio in the last few days. Well done, and thanks for the excellent show. All the best for 2018. My 2017, he says, ended in disaster at my friend's New Year's Eve party after consuming much-needed alcohol and shooters to get rid of the memories of last year. It was a terrible year for me. I was pushed into the pool, and just my luck, my face hit the side of the pool, resulting in four of my teeth being badly damaged and chipped. I had a consolation beer once the bleeding stopped, then headed to the ER for x-rays and injections. It's one of those things, I guess. I am, however, still optimistic that 2018 is going to be my year."
Good for you.
What a trooper.
Yeah. Good for you. All right. And I'm looking for that special woman to be in my life. I am a divorced single father. You are just a prize, my friend, with your chipped teeth.
Chipped teeth.
Your divorce, your children from another marriage. Some woman is just angling to get you, Michael. They're lining up around the block.
How old looking are for, you? Does he say?
He doesn't give us much more biographical detail. Michael, let's try and set you up. Send us a picture. Send us some more bio info. Mm. And let's see what we can do for you. Looking forward to many hours of Cliff Central streaming for the coming year. Big hello to Mabali.
Subtle,
he does also say hello to the rest of
them. Ben, calm yourself.
And Amanda. And by the way, Amanda's not gone. She's still going to be popping in, telling us about what's going on in the East Rand. So don't panic about that, all right? I'm very happy to have in the studio someone we got hold of last year, Tony Becker. She has suffered from anorexia. That's not the most interesting thing about her, but that's what we're going to talk about here this morning. How are you, Tony?
Good, and you, Garrett?
Yeah, just sit forward for me a little bit. Okay, microphone's not going to come to you. Bring Muhammad to the mountain. You know how it goes. How are you?
I'm good, and yourself?
There's some pretty cool tats on your arm.
Thank you. The last time you saw me, I didn't have any.
Yeah, that looks amazing.
Thank you so much. Buster Bolton. Guys, that's, I'll just plug that.
Yeah. That's beautiful. You got like a woman and then a whole lot of patterning. There's some roses and...
My love potion.
And there's an Indian sort of... it looks almost like those henna things that they do some of the time.
Exactly. Yeah, quite a romantic.
All right, we got to take a picture of that and put it online. How are you? What's been happening?
A lot of change in my life.
Happy New Year, by the way.
Thank you. You too. Last year I decided to make a huge change in my life. I was... very miserable. I hear you guys were talking about that earlier. And I was miserable for 16 years. And
why were you miserable for 16 years? Who would go through that for 16 years? Did you know you were miserable?
Oh, I loved it. I reckon I was self-indulgent. I thought it made me interesting. Uh-huh. And in a way, I became addicted to it and the chaos.
And did you get attention for being miserable?
Absolutely. Until it stopped. And until I realized exactly why I was doing it. I think... it started in high school.
All right.
And the school I went to, you wanted to stand out in some way.
What school? Is it like an art school or one of those
things? It's a private religious school.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. There we go. You got
already
this.
Like, oh,
ding, ding, ding.
Yep.
Wonder why we got psychological problems.
Yeah, I'm
kidding.
That
a lot of people go to those.
Yeah.
No, a lot of schools like that produce excellent, happy people who are balanced, but then occasionally they also produce people who are miserable.
Let's just say the school I went to, we had a fashion show every year mm-hmm. in Standard 8, and they canceled my year because people were sick to lose weight.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So is this where it started?
It started, when I was 9 years old, also in a private religious school. I think I was just a very sensitive child.
Uh-huh.
And someone would tell me, oh, your hair's curly, it's gross, you should straighten it. And I started straightening my hair at 9 years old. And I shaved the side because the piece wouldn't go straight.
Oh, my God.
And I started stealing my mom's makeup at 9 years old because someone told me I had a red nose. So I started putting that on. And I think that's where it started.
Now, I mean, I've always thought that there's this funny balance between kids being honest with each other and having to deal with adversity when you're a kid.
Yeah.
You know, everybody thinks they're ugly. Everybody thinks they're unpopular. Everybody thinks they're less than cool. Everyone when they're a kid.
Yeah.
There's always someone in the school who's more popular than you, and chances are they feel worse than you do. You just don't know it.
Yeah, exactly.
But then there's real bullying. And one offside comment from somebody can set you off on a life of self-loathing.
Yeah.
Especially if they catch you at the right moment where you're weak, where maybe things are going on at home that don't help, where you've had bad news.
That's exactly what happened, Gareth.
So was it those comments? Was it about your red nose and about your hair not being straight? And
I think I had stuff at home. My dad was in a really serious accident and he was in a coma for 3 weeks, you know, and we didn't know if he was going to, I mean, this was when I was I think I was 10 at the time. And there was a person I was friends with. Look, I'm not blaming her for any of this, but she would constantly tell me I was less than.
That bitch.
That damn bitch. I don't hold a resentment at all.
It's fine. Just give me her ID number, girl.
When did you kill her? When did you kill her and bury her in the Karoo?
Yeah.
She's in my basement.
Okay, yeah. Stop
I have
right
skin
there.
Skin suit.
All right. No, so let's just give this some serious attention for a second, because I think for a lot of young people, and even it can happen later on in life, there are various catalysts that then eventually drive you to the point where you go over the edge and you start to have a very unrealistic expectation of what your body and your face and the rest of you can look like, and you start to harm yourself.
Yes.
That's where it becomes major, because then you're not only doing the very physical and real damage to yourself, but you're also harming people around you. You're living in an unhealthy, not particularly salubrious environment, and all you do all day is damage and destruction.
Yes. Look, I think that all started in high school.
Yeah.
I was told I was weird and different, and I took it on, like, guys, I was told I was weird because I listened to System of a Down. Like, that's how hectic my school was. So weird. So I wanted to stand out in some way or separate myself from everyone. They told me I was weird. I went to school. I was like, okay, I'll show you weird. Mm-hmm. And then I became the goth kid. From then, I needed something that was mine and something that would get me attention. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie about that. It started with attention. Oh, mm-hmm. I want to be beautiful. I want these girls to be jealous of me. Mm-hmm. They couldn't give a shit.
Yeah.
But it's all on me. And I started starving myself and doing whatever it took to lose weight, from pills to bulimia. I was bulimic in high school as well.
Doesn't your body rebel against that? Doesn't your body just, you get so hungry? Like, I've tried to starve myself. I mean, just from the point of view, like, I don't need to eat horrible food. It's hard. It's really tough. You have to be a pretty disciplined human being to get anorexia and bulimia going, right?
Well, look, you definitely, I think it's just the self-loathing that becomes your discipline. Yeah. And it is hard. It was hard in the beginning, but your body does get used to starving. I could say I forgot what it felt like to be hungry for a long time. It was like you get used
don't
to feeling
weak. Don't you lack energy?
Completely. Completely.
So you're a bit of a zombie, right?
I was a zombie for, I looked like a zombie, I was a zombie. It was, yeah.
Do you also not get addicted to the control that you find that you have over time, where you think, oh my gosh, I've gone 30 days without eating. Let's see how much more I can push it. And then you start becoming addicted to that self-discipline and control.
The control is a big part of it.
What do you allow yourself to have? You're starving yourself, but do you drink water? I mean, what are you allowed? What kind of crazy rules do you make in your own head?
So it's all pertinent to the person. Some people will just have apples. I loved Frizzuccinos.
Oh.
I would have Frizzuccinos all the time. I would get 3 a day.
No sugar in them, though.
No, there's loads of sugar in them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how you'd sustain this very unhealthy.
Yeah, that
body
was the energy.
That's, you'd provide just enough energy to make it through the day.
Exactly, yeah.
Were you sleeping properly?
I slept all the time, but then...
Because you were exhausted.
I was finished. Hmm. It was hard. It was hard to climb up a flight of stairs. Only last year, I was able to walk up a flight of stairs healthy without, like, stopping to breathe. But then also, I found drugs.
Yeah.
And that took away the obsession with eating, because I would lose weight anyway. Mm-hmm. And the control, like you were saying earlier, and the obsession became about the drugs. And then once I put down the drugs, the eating disorder came back. Because then again, I've lost control over something. I need control.
But you just breezed past putting down the drugs. That's not so easy.
No, that was...
So how did you get out of that?
So I ended up going to 3 rehabs. And the last one I went to was Houghton House. And I went in for, I thought I was going in for 3 weeks, and I ended up being there for 8 weeks.
Wow.
I went into kidney failure.
Jesus. From the drugs or from the punishment your body taken from not eating as well?
Both. It was definitely from both. Obviously the drugs played a major role, but also during drug addiction, I stopped eating.
Did they identify both problems, or did they think it was just a drug thing? How long did it take them to catch on that you'd also been anorexic?
Probably about a day.
Oh.
It was pretty obvious.
I mean, you're thin. You are thin. You're even thin now.
Yeah.
You're a healthy thin, but, you know, I can only imagine what you must have looked like and felt like when you went in.
It was horrible. I think I was about 35 kilograms.
Gee.
At that point, yeah.
It's barely your bones.
35 kilograms.
I mean, your hair weighs 35 kilograms.
And my hair fell out.
Ay, ay, ay.
This is new hair, guys.
So what are the horrible things that happen to people when you're anorexic? I mean, where your hair falls out, apparently bad, bad breath.
Yeah, and hair grows on the back of your neck.
What?
A little bit on your back. Yeah, it's like to keep you warm, it's little hairs. Look at Gareth's
face. He's not like a werewolf.
You become like a Sasquatch.
Sasquatch. An anorexic Sasquatch.
I didn't know that. What else happens to you?
Well, it's the weakness. It's pains. It's back pains. It's to go to sleep, you feel your, for example, I used to struggle with my hip bones.
Because they're cutting into everything because exactly. They're so sharp because there's no muscle and fat around them.
Yeah, that was painful. That was really uncomfortable.
Did you look great though?
I thought I did. I really thought I looked like semi okay.
So when you looked in the mirror, you'd think you were fat even though you were 35 kilograms?
Yes. And there were certain places I would focus on. My thighs were a big thing and my arms. Now looking back that I'm recovered, I look at those photos and I can see it now. I never used to be able to see it.
And how would you handle the constant comments from people saying, you look XYZ? What did that do to you?
It's such a complicated thing. This is a big thing that I wanted to bring up is when you're struggling with anorexia, comments can be, it's such a illness, such a mental illness that anything can be taken the wrong way. So someone says to me, you look thin. Yes, great. I love that. But am I thin enough? Why aren't you telling me I look sick? Why aren't you telling me you're worried about me? When I start to gain weight and someone says, oh my God, you're looking healthier. That was the biggest insult. And getting past being told those things and actually taking them now as a compliment was the most difficult thing for me to overcome. It's little things like that. On Sunday, someone said to me, wow, Tony, you're really looking healthy. And for the first time in my life, I took it as a compliment and didn't cry over that comment.
That's how
obsessive it is.
Yeah, you're living in a different world when you have this body dysmorphia stuff, huh?
It's your world. It's only about you. It's self-obsession.
And every word can be twisted to mean what you want it to mean.
Exactly, exactly. Anything.
Gee, it's hard when you're in that situation, though, to also not be completely self-absorbed.
You are self-absorbed. I mean, the amount of times I would look in a mirror, think this person looked at me this way. Why didn't this person tell me?
How do you get on with your normal life? What were you able to do normal stuff during all of this?
Well, I focused a lot on work.
Uh-huh.
And I threw
Were you competent
into
at
that.
Work?
I not when I was on drugs. After the drugs,
yeah,
I would say I threw myself completely into work. And I worked super hard because it was a distraction from eating. Because I kept myself busy, so I would do well in the workplace. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I know some people who just, they're eating the whole time. I don't know how they get any work done. I'm hiring anorexics. No.
We get the job done.
That's a tagline, but no
hate mail for that, Gareth.
When you have to beat things like this, when you have to get through it, I mean, this rehab, I'm sure that there's a lot that you can cover there, but is there an aha moment? Is there a huge amount of work you have to do on yourself? Is it people you talk to? Is it the material you read? Is it experience? Is it pain? Like, how do you break through?
I can tell you the moment that everything changed for me with the anorexia, it was, look, drug addiction, you have support groups. You can work through therapy. But with the eating disorder, it's completely on you. No one else can help you except you. And what happened to me was, it's going to sound really small, but I met a guy who was super cool, not in a romantic way, just a friend. And he asked me if I had cancer. My hair was falling out and I was really, really thin. And that shocked me. And he was blatant. He saw a photo of me from my matric dance. Mm. And he nearly started crying. So I was like, what's wrong? He's like, you look like a different person. You look like you're dying. You were beautiful. You looked lovely. And it's like looking at a corpse now. And that shifted my perspective because I've never had a stranger almost be that real with me. And little things kept happening after that, and then a big thing.
Just hold on a second because I'm confused. Some people would say that anorexics need to be handled with kid gloves. You need to be very careful what you say to them because anything can trigger worse behavior.
Yeah.
And they can keep going down that path. So it's almost like you only want therapists and trained people talking to someone with this kind of, because it's a mental condition.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And then what you're telling me is that some dude off the street who was honest and real with you, who told you the truth without really, I mean, he was being considerate because clearly he cared about you. And yeah. He demonstrated that. But he's the one who helped you make the breakthrough?
Yes. And I can tell you, I've been to about 10 therapists and they knew why I was there. They knew I had an eating disorder and I could manipulate. Not because I knew what they wanted me to say. And I knew what I anticipated what they were going to say. This is a complete stranger who genuinely thought I was sick. He had no idea about an eating disorder. And for some reason, it shifted something. I can't say why. I can't say it works for everyone. But it genuinely changed my outlook on a lot of things. And also, I was in a relationship that ended because of my eating disorder.
So this was not society. I mean, when you hear about these people who talk about fat shaming and a body positive, that doesn't have any effect on your mental condition as an individual.
Not at all.
So if everyone in society just suddenly said, oh, we love every kind of person, no matter what shape and size, that's not going to make any difference in your life, is it?
Not at all. I don't even share those posts.
Yeah.
To be honest. Sorry, guys.
No, that's what we want is the honesty. Yeah. I'm trying to understand this condition. It's very difficult to get my head around it because I've never experienced it, and a lot of it has to do with experience, and each experience is different.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I think a lot of people still grapple with understanding mental disorders.
Yeah.
And in an attempt to understand them, we like to rank them. So we feel sorrier for, say, maybe an alcoholic and a drug addict. And, and then we rank them in order of what we think is believable and important. So what is the general belief by people when it comes to eating disorders? Are they sympathetic to it? Do they mostly think, no, man, it's self-inflicted?
Yeah.
What is the general perception around eating disorders as a mental illness?
It's frustrating. People get frustrated by them. They think, oh, she's just vain and she's self-obsessed. You are self-obsessed. I was self-obsessed, but it wasn't in a positive way. It wasn't me thinking I was magnificent.
And there's not what Mubs is saying is true too. There's not a huge degree of sympathy.
Yeah, there really isn't.
Like if you meet a drug addict, you like shame. It's not their fault. They're enslaved to the substance. If you meet someone who's got depression, you're like, well, that's chemical. It's in their brain. There's nothing they can do about it. So you have to be understanding. But somehow, when it comes to eating, because it's you putting things, they think, oh, well, you could just stop doing that.
Exactly. It's like when someone says to someone with depression, "Oh, just get out of bed and smile." You know, people say things like, just eat it. What's wrong with you? Oh, just shut up, Tony. You know, stuff like that, which I get and I understand, because if you don't suffer with the illness, I can see what it looks like from an outsider perspective. It's just a vain girl or guy who wants to look good all the time.
And there are guys, by the way, who have this problem too, right?
Oh, it's a very common and serious problem, and it is getting worse.
Is it like alcohol addiction or any of those things where they never say I've recovered? You used the word recovered just now, which made me think of it. Are you always recovering?
Recovering.
Are you worried you could slip back into this at any given time?
Oh, with anorexia? Definitely. It scares me every day, but I can say now for the first time, I don't want to rely on it anymore, and I've given up relying on it. And that's what I think. I don't want to say I'm recovered. I do want to say I'm in recovery and it's a just for today thing. Sorry. I'm just thinking about that. You're right. I don't want to say I'm recovered. I'm recovering and I'm recovering every day.
Yeah. Cause it's not something that you defeated and you put it in the box and move on. You know, it's in your head.
Exactly.
And it's not going to go away. It's a demon that's going to keep working at you unless you fight it back every day. So exactly. If that's the case, are you able to have now that you've made so much progress, because you clearly have, are you able to have a normal relationship with food? Are you able to have normal relationships with people? Are you feeling more physically and mentally and emotionally vital and connected?
Yeah. In terms of food, there's certain things I never ate for 15 years, 16 years. So say pizza. I've managed to have 2 slices of pizza. That sounds like a really
you martyr.
Really hectic thing, but it's that was a big thing for me, and I'm getting okay with that. I can't say that I would eat a whole pizza now, but
I'll help you. I'll have the other half.
We'll all help.
Yeah, sure.
Let's do it.
You talk me into that.
I think I'll always have a difficult kind of relationship with food. There are fear foods that I am forcing myself to get over, like the pizza, like a burger. I'm eating meat again. Things like that.
I've got a special surprise for you. We weren't going to tell you about this, but I have a special prize here. They've given me a voucher for $7 KFC for you when you leave the studio this morning. Are you excited?
I'm so amped. So excited. I'm going to go right now. Eat the whole thing at work.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give it to my colleagues, I promise.
Relationships?
Relationships, everything's changed in terms of that. First of all, just in terms of family, I'm closer to everyone in my family. I think.
Do they understand what you've gone through now?
They really understand it. Also, another thing that changed was my father was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer that has spread.
Mm.
And stuff has been really hard in that regard. And me and him had a open, honest conversation about everything. And the first thing he said to me when he was diagnosed was, please don't use this as an excuse to go back.
Mm.
And I really will never do that. He's my best friend. My mom's my best friend. We've all grown closer now that I am in recovery. Mm. In terms of friendship, I have the best friends in the world and they understand. When I decided to recover, I actually sent a message to all of them to say specific things I don't want them to say to me during the time and everything. Right,
because they have to be a part of that
kind
of safe zone that you're in while you're getting better.
Exactly. And in terms of my love life, I've got a boyfriend now and I've never been happier. And he understands.
He's also happier because you don't have a hairy back anymore. Yeah. Thrilled. That's what I heard from him.
He's so excited.
He just WhatsApped us and said, yeah, she's way better now. But he has to understand these things, right? So you have to bring people in. And this is not about being self-absorbed. This is about being honest.
Yeah.
You have to let people know how your story has evolved and where you're at so that they can, first of all, understand.
Yeah.
And second of all, so that they don't treat you differently.
Exactly. And also, if I do go back, they can pick it up.
Mm.
It's a difficult thing to bring up with people, especially in a relationship like that. It's really hard. Some people will run.
I'd probably run.
Damn.
No, I have to tell you, it's very difficult to understand if you're not in it. You've already said as much. But I think we've all got to just be aware of how many people are silently suffering.
Yeah. And sometimes you can't see it.
No, you can't. And also there's this bias towards thin in society. So if you see someone who's thin, and I'm not speaking of skeletal, deathly thin, you think, wow, lucky her.
Yeah.
You imagine she can't have any problems. She's got her weight under control. She obviously knows how much she's allowed, portion sizes, calories, blah, blah, blah. What you don't realize is she may have these dark demons.
Yeah. And it's hard to talk about. It really is.
Society has no problem telling someone who's overweight to lose the weight.
Yeah.
But we seem to have very few issues around telling thin people they should put on a little bit.
Yeah.
And of course, doing that is exactly the opposite of what should be said to it.
Exactly. It's very complicated.
Well, I'm glad you could talk about this now. Have you thought about kind of making it a thing that you do? Especially at schools?
I would like to do something. I just have to be very careful because I know going to a school, it's very easy to say something that triggers people who do have the potential to suffer from this disease. I don't want to tell them what I did and the stuff I did because they can use it as, oh, I just learned a trick.
That's so sick. That's so sick, right?
Think about this, like with addiction. You have NA, you have groups. You can sit in a group and help each other. With an eating disorder, you can't have an eating, in my opinion, you can't have an eating disorder group.
They'll all steal each other's ideas and get worse together.
And they won't say it. It'll be a silent competition.
God.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, so it's a very difficult, that's why it's such a difficult disease to beat. It's very difficult to go into an institution, which I have done, for specifically an eating disorder. Because there's a group of girls and guys who kind of don't want to be bigger than each other. Everyone wants to be the smallest one there.
it's very, very hard to figure out. But I'm glad we've made some progress today. And thank you for coming to share your story.
It's my pleasure.
And I appreciate the fact that you're so open and honest about it, because it's not always comfortable to talk about, right?
Oh, it's very difficult.
Especially to strangers.
I was petrified to come in.
No, well, I hope you don't feel too bad now.
Nah, it's all good.
Yeah. By the way, you're looking fat.
Gareth, you know what?
I'm kidding. Bad, no. Come on. What are you talking about? Come on.
Just for today. Just for today.
And if you want to share some of those tips.
No. I'll write you a letter just now.
No.
No, Tony, in all seriousness, thank you. What you're doing here is heroic, because there may be someone who is going through the same thing or at some stage of that story of yours, and they might be able to hear something in this that has a positive trigger rather than a negative one.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
And well done, hey? I mean, this is not some patronizing thing that I say to people who've overcome great adversity. It's something that many of us never get to.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Well done.
Awesome.
Well, nice to hear your story. And I mean, it's not a pleasant story. And I'm glad that you recognize that there is still work ahead.
Yes, yes.
And you never really beat these things.
Exactly.
All right. Hopefully we'll see you again soon, and you'll have more interesting tales to tell us, and hopefully some experiences that will add to the ability for ordinary people like you and me to get through.
Awesome. I'd love to do that, guys.
Yeah, and if you do get out there and start helping other young people, let us know about that too. We'd like to help you.
Okay, rad. Cool. Thank you so much, everyone.
No worries. Thanks.
Have an awesome day.
Tony Becker, everybody.
Cheers, guys.
Hell of a story. Sure. That's amazing. Let's get into the unnews for this morning, and then we will get to our discussion with, who was it, Greg Mills? Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. Greg Mills was the author of How South Africa Works and How We Must Work Better. I remember speaking to him last year. Very interesting conversation. Here's what you need to know today. The investigation into state capture is finally going ahead. President Jacob Zuma has not only agreed to it, but he says he has already chosen his commission of inquiry. He hasn't revealed any of the identities yet, but he did say they will all arrive at Waterkloof Air Force Base on a night in the near future, and he'll keep us informed.
Okay.
Elon Musk's SpaceX mission called Zuma has failed terribly. Thrust into low orbit, it went up in flames and achieved absolutely nothing. Musk said he shouldn't have been surprised, really. Nothing called Zuma has ever amounted to anything successful in life. It just costs a lot of people a lot of money. And finally, North Korea have confirmed they will be taking part in the 2018 Winter Olympics in South Korea. Many say this is a positive step in repairing frayed relations between the two nations, but the truth of the matter is that Kim Jong-un has run out of butter and cheese. Everyone he is sending over to compete is actually going to bring some back, which should keep him happy until at least the end of March. Thank you to our guest, Tony, this morning. Thank you to Sia, Mubs, Ben, and to Palesa. And most especially, thank you to you. We will join you again tomorrow, bright and early.
This is CliffCentral.com.